It's 1862 in Charleston, South Carolina, where the Civil War began. Robert at the time was 23 years old. He had been born in 1839. At this time, when the Civil War broke out, he had been in the employ of a sidewheel steamer boat called the Planter. He started off as just a laborer there and sort of rose through the proverbial ranks and was the wheelman or the pilot ferrying men and munitions around Charleston Harbor.
History's strange, it's alien, and it won't give us what we would like to have.
Hour three of this Tuesday, the 14th of May, 2024, being brought to you by Richmond Transmission and Auto Service. And since it is an 8 o'clock hour of a Tuesday, it's Dave Does History on Bill Mick Live. Dave Bowman with us throughout the morning. And now we're turning it over to him to take us to a really interesting piece of history. Dave, tell us what you got in mind here.
So imagine, if you will, that you are a Union sailor aboard a Union ship in Charleston Harbor in 1862. I think I said 19, but 1862. You are part of the blockading force that is keeping Charleston Harbor closed. And other than, you know, the occasional attempt at running the blockade, this is pretty boring duty. And it's just after six bells. It's just after 3 a.m. on the midwatch. And you're the lookout, and you look out at Charleston Harbor, and you see a ship coming towards you from the harbor. It has sailed past Fort Sumter, and it is coming right towards you.
Okay.
So you do what all lookouts do. You sound the alarm. Ship attempting to get out of the harbor. The alarm is sound, and they beat the quarters, and the gun ports are swung open, and everybody's ready to open fire. But it's still 3:20 in the morning. It's hard to see. You know, it's just sort of an outline kind of thing. But the ship is coming at you, but it's not going really fast. You know what I mean? It's just sort of sailing towards you. And so at the last second, right before you're ready to give the order to open fire, the lookout says, "Hey, wait a minute. There appears to be a white flag hanging from the mast. This ship may be surrendering. Hold your fire." And they do. And as the ship comes alongside, there's a realization that this is a very important Confederate naval vessel. It is a very special ship. It's a ship that's designed to ply with a low draft at high speed so that it can patrol rivers, and it's a really good ship. It's a really important ship to the Confederates. But here it is surrendering to the Union Navy at 3 a.m. And as you look over the side, you discover that the captain of this vessel, the man driving this ship out to you under the white flag, isn't some Confederate sailor who's just decided that he's had enough and he wants out. It's a black man. And not only is he a black man, it's a former slave, or actually a current slave who's about to be a former slave.
Yeah.
Who has stolen this ship from the Confederates, sailed it out to you, and said, "Here, you want this?"
I want to hear how he stole the ship. That's interesting.
And that's really just the beginning of the story, the tip of the iceberg.
We continue in a minute on Bill Mick Live. Dave Bowman bringing us Dave Does History. So a slave steals a Confederate ship, Dave, and brings it to surrender to the Northern Troops Navy, the Union Navy. I can imagine, I'd be thinking, is this a ruse? Are they going to get really close, and are they going to attack us? But they, even in the dark at 3 o'clock in the morning, they were able to see somebody's giving this ship up. That's pretty cool.
It's a remarkable story, and it also is indicative of some things that perhaps we don't really grasp. Please don't understand what I'm about to say here. Slavery was not good. It was evil. It was cruel. It was an abomination, and it was so bad that it required a positive law to keep it in place. In other words, there had to be a law saying slavery was legal in order to keep it in place. That's what Salmon Chase once said about it. That said, we have something of a misunderstanding of how slavery actually worked, in the sense that many slaves were not chained up at night. They weren't confined to the barracks, as it were. In fact, many slaves were trusted by their masters, including a man by the name of Robert Smalls, who was a slave there in Charleston, South Carolina, where he also happened to be quite an accomplished pilot of ships, in particular, the Confederate States ship Planter, which, as I said to you, was a very special vessel. It was very fast. It was very shallow drafted. It was a great little ship. And the three Confederate officers that manned the ship trusted Smalls to the degree that they would leave him alone at night to guard the ship and keep, you know, people away from it and the likes of that. And then they would come back in the morning and do their Confederate naval business. On the night of May 12th, 1862, the three Confederate officers together decided that they needed a break. And so they told Smalls and his tiny crew there, a couple of his crewmen, "We'll be back in the morning. Stay here."
Okay.
So, Mr. Smalls, who was quite an accomplished pilot, a naval ship pilot, got together with his crew and said, "You know what? This is our chance." Now, they'd been planning this for some time.
There was no other Navy crew on this ship for the Confederates?
No,
just the three officers. Wow.
So, they got up steam, and they left the pier. They just sailed off. Now, the most amazing part of this, Bill, is that they didn't just sail out to the Union Navy and say, "Here we are." First, they sailed over to a pier on the other side of the harbor, where all three of the slaves' now families were waiting for them.
Nice.
Picked them up. Smalls's wife brought a big white bedsheet with her, which would eventually become the flag, the surrender flag.
Right.
And they headed out into the harbor. Now,
so all of these families, they had snuck off of their plantation or their places of enslavement and were able to get out, and they were ready to go.
Or they had passes from their owners saying, "Yeah, we can be out tonight." However you did it. It's not uncommon if you've ever read Frederick Douglass's book. So as they sail out into the harbor, Smalls has a plan for how he's going to do this. His other crewmen are a little panicked because he's going to stick to the main channel, which goes very, very close to Fort Sumter, which is now in the hands of the Confederates, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
They want him to swing around Fort Sumter, go far away from it. But he knows that if he does that, it will immediately raise suspicion. So he says, "Nope, we are going to sail straight by, just like we normally would. We're going to sail straight by the fort and head out where we're going." Now, this is not unusual, except that it's 3 a.m. That's the only really big difference. Smalls also has another plan. The normal captain of the Planter wears a specific type of straw hat, and Smalls has that hat. So he puts it on. It's the dark of the night. As they get closer to Fort Sumter, of course, Sumter issues the challenge. But because he's the pilot and because he's been doing this so long, Smalls knows the countersigns. And so he steps out onto the wing of the bridge there with his hat on, the special straw hat, and he does the hand signals that are the countersign. Now, everybody on that boat knows that those guns at Fort Sumter are now pointing at him because this is a little unusual.
Mm-hmm.
But the code, in the words of Star Wars, it's an older code, but it checks out. And they let him go. And on they go to their famed interaction then with the Union Navy, which is they basically just sailed out this really, really good ship, the Planter, took it to the Union Navy and said, "Hi, we stole this. it's yours now. What do you want us to do? Now, remember, this is 1862, May of 1862, so it still wasn't clear what the Union forces were supposed to do with slaves. But in this case, they went, heck yeah, we want that. And they recognized in Smalls a special man who was not just very daring and willing to steal this ship and bring it to the Union, but he was a very accomplished pilot. And they said to themselves, well, this guy could be very useful to us in the Union Navy.
Mm-hmm.
So they made him a pilot. They said, welcome to the United States Navy. Glad to have you. And we're going to use you to help us take the CSS Planter, which we are not going to rename. We're going to turn it into the USS Planter. And for the next 3 years, the Planter will be a big part of the Navy's activities around Charleston. Sometimes commanded by Planter, or Small, sorry. Sometimes not. But for the next rest of his life, Robert Smalls will be...
More of the story is ahead. Hang on.
Dive into history. Dave Bowman joins us on Bill Mick Live.
So with our history lesson from Dave Bowman this week, Robert Smalls, who stole a Confederate Navy ship, a Confederate slave trusted to watch this ship overnight, manned it with a small crew, and he and his small crew, I'm assuming they were all fellow slaves, picked up their families along the way and surrendered the ship to the Northern Navy. I love the story, Dave. This is good.
And we're really, I mean, we're just scratching the surface of this. If you were to actually read the accounts of how this happened, it is one of those stories that just makes your heart beat. I mean,
I can see where you would love this as a movie, as you said earlier.
Yeah. And then the celebration when they actually realized that they were free. It's incredible. And even that part would just make a great movie, but there's more to the story. Now, one of the things that the Union had suffered with for many months at that point of the war was Pinkerton's disease, which is the spy agency Pinkerton.
Mm-hmm.
Used to tell Lincoln and McClellan and all these other leaders that the Confederates are so strong, they have billions of people, and you don't have enough strength, and blah, blah, blah. And that's one of the things that they believed about Charleston, that it was so heavily defended that they would have no ability to ever do anything about it. Well, here comes Smalls, and the first thing he tells him is, no, there's like 2,000 guys there. The rest were sent to Tennessee and Virginia. There's nobody there. In fact, the entire south side of this at Coal Inlet, completely undefended. And the Union went, what? Sent some guys over there a week later, captured Coal Inlet, and completely encircled Charleston Harbor and freed up some ships and the likes of that. So already this is intelligence. It's paying off. And the likes of that.
There is probably no better intelligence in the South in the Civil War than from a now former slave.
A lot of cases of that. There are hundreds of cases of former slaves coming over, or even slaves that went back to their masters who would come under the Union troops and say, this, that, the other, and go on their way. Well, of course, this story makes its way into the Northern papers, which is problematic in a way, because now the story gets out. But at the same time, it gives the North a hero. And remember, at this point, it was still being hotly debated whether this war was to free the slaves or to preserve the Union, or both. And now here you have this incredible story of Robert Smalls taking this ship and escaping. And it's, like I said, it has this effect. But of course, the story gets out, and the Confederate authorities are not happy about this. And they put the three officers on trial for court-martial. They court-martial the three officers, convict them of dereliction of duty, and then about 6-8 months later decide, you know, maybe it really wasn't their fault. Maybe it's just the way we do things is problematic, and they didn't really do anything wrong. It's just those slaves betrayed us.
They left their ship unattended, other than by slaves,
right?
And they really didn't do anything wrong.
Well, the slaves betrayed us, you know. It's
the
slaves' fault. Can't be a white guy's fault. It's got to be something else.
Apparently not.
They overturned the convictions and sent them on their way, and they disappeared in history, while Robert Smalls would go on to even bigger things.
So you say Smalls captained this ship on and off throughout service to the Union Navy.
Oh, he's just getting started, Bill. Imagine that life. You know, you've come out of slavery, you've stolen this ship, you've given it to the Union. And oh, by the way, on board the ship isn't just the ship. There's also four guns that he also stole from the Confederates and brought to the Union that they had planned on using to defend some stuff. And he brought all that stuff to
them. So they weren't part of the ship's armament. This was cargo.
Right. He ends up getting prize money, because if you know anything about how that works, he ends up getting prize money of about $1,500 in 1862 money. He is begged. They
not
want him,
Confederate dollars either.
No. These are real greenbacks. They wanted him to go to New York to, you know, start encouraging freedom of slaves. It's his influence, not specifically. I mean, he doesn't go to Lincoln and advocate for this, but his actions cause Lincoln to have Edward Stanton, sign an order which now allows up to 5,000 African Americans to enlist in the Union Army in the Carolinas. They end up being the 1st and 2nd South Carolina regiments, and they become famous. Smalls ends up engaged in 17 major battles or engagements of the Civil War.
Wow.
He is, because of his knowledge of the waters, because of his knowledge of how to do things on ships, he is actually commissioned into the United States Army, which is controlling these things around there anyway. He is assigned later on as the pilot of the ironclad Keokuk, which takes part in the attack on Fort Sumter in 1863. The ship sinks. He and the crew get off of that. So there's another chapter in the story. He ends up as the pilot of the USS Isaac Smith, which they're attempting to take some stuff, and it gets captured as well, but he gets away from that. Later on, he's piloting the Planter again. He's attacking the Confederate batteries at Secessionville. The captain of the ship fled. He ran away. Smalls, however, refuses to surrender the ship because he knows that if he does surrender the ship, he's going to be summarily killed. So he takes command of the boat, sails it back out to safety. And the Navy says, you know what, we're going to make you a captain, and we're going to make you the captain of the Planter, the ship that you actually stole. That enough of a story for you?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Oh, we're not even close to done, but we don't have time to tell you the rest of his story. He actually becomes...
And you're not writing the screenplay yet?
No, I'm not. He fights throughout the rest of the Civil War. He becomes a South Carolina representative to Congress. He runs for business. He becomes a Republican. And eventually, he is appointed the Lieutenant Colonel of the 3rd Regiment, South Carolina Militia, and is promoted to Brigadier General. And he's elected to Congress, serves 2 terms in Congress from South Carolina, and becoming one of the most famous people out there. In 1875, he opposes the plan to stop Reconstruction because, as we've talked about before, that's going to be a problem. And he continues to live his life after being appointed by President Benjamin Harrison to stuff. He just goes on. And one of the last things he does, Bill, he buys the house of the person that owned him in Charleston. He buys that house.
Ooh.
Moves his family in. The former owner sues to get it back and loses in court. And as a gesture of kindness, he allows the widow of the guy that owned him to live there for the last 9 or 10 months of her life. Is that enough of a story for you?
Not without compassion. Yeah, that's plenty of story you're telling me. But wait, there's more.
Still no movie. Oh, and there's no Navy ship named after him.
Really? There should be. Dave Does History continues. Your calls in our next segment. You want to line them up now. It's 321-768-1240. What a cool story this is. We're back in moments on WMMP.
Bill now, 321-768-1240.
Richmond Transmission and Auto Service, this hour's sponsor of the show. Thanks to Christine and Frank for that. Thanks to Dave Bowman for bringing us a very interesting hour of Dave Does History, talking about Robert Smalls. And Dave, the story not yet done, huh?
No, it really isn't. And again, let me say this. We're just scratching the surface. Hopefully I'm just whetting your appetite, and you'll go from here through the day and you'll go, you know what? I want to know more about Robert Smalls. And you'll look at it and it sounds just like Robert Smalls. You know, you're killing me, Smalls.
Yeah.
It sounds exactly. Just look it up. Just Google it. You'll be amazed. When everything is said and done and Mr. Smalls is buried in the ground, the state of South Carolina, which was a Confederate state, by the way, celebrates Robert Smalls Day every May 13th, which was yesterday, I get it, but every 13th of May, they celebrate Robert Smalls Day to celebrate this escaped slave who stole the ship and went on to other things. There are numerous, there's a school, by the way, in Chero, South Carolina, named for him. You wonder if they'll ever, you know, rename that or how many people understand why it's named that. During World War II, Camp Robert Smalls was named for him. It's a Great Lakes Naval Training Center. Back in that era, the Navy was segregated, and so they named the side that was training black sailors Camp Robert Smalls. And in 2004, Bill, finally, at long last, a ship, although it was a United States Army ship, USAV, was named for him, the Major General Robert Smalls LSV-8, which was a logistics support vessel. That's the first American ship named, or first Army ship named for an African American. But that was 2004. And there are various highways.
Wow, to get there, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Especially for a story like this. There are, you know, statues and highways and the likes of that. But there was no Navy ship. Now, you'd think that the Navy would be all over this, right? But
yeah,
they weren't. Until 23, 2023. When the Navy didn't build a ship and name it after him, but they took a Ticonderoga-class cruiser that had been named the USS Chancellorsville. Now, Chancellorsville was a battle, was a major battle in the Civil War. And it's one of those battles that it's fascinating to me. I've been up and down the Chancellorsville battlefield many times. It's a beautiful area. It's central Virginia, just outside of Fredericksburg. But it's a battle that arguably the Union should have won. And had they won, probably would have won the war shortly thereafter. But it was, quote unquote, Lee's finest moment when he divided his force in the face of the enemy. Jackson made his flank march, and the Chancellorsville battle was lost by the Union. But here we have this cruiser named Chancellorsville, essentially being named after a Confederate victory. And the naming commission that was put together after the situation in 2020 said, you know what? It's not really a good thing to name United States Navy vessels after battles that we lost. A lesson which, by the way, we have not learned. If you check the latest naming regimen, you'll see what I'm talking about. They decided to change the name of the USS Chancellorsville to the USS Robert Smalls. Now, whatever their reasoning was, whatever their logic was, however you feel about renaming things or not renaming things, they didn't rename the USS Planter. They just changed the USS from CSS. But the USS Chancellorsville, they renamed Robert Smalls. And today it sails the ocean blue, defending our freedoms. But it's named after a man who stole a ship from the Confederates and went on to become one of our greatest naval war heroes in the history of our country.
And we're back in a minute on WMMB. If you've missed any of this hour of Dave Does History, one of the most compelling, I think, that we have had, pick it up in the podcast section at BillMick.com or on the Bill Mick Live iHeartRadio channel. You'll find those links to there, top of the page at BillMick.com. Let's get a quick phone call in. Dave, Mario's in Cape Canaveral. Mario, good morning.
Good morning. This reminds me, this discussion of Dooley Wilson, the piano player in Casablanca. He was born in the late 1800s, like, I don't know, 1883, 1890 or something. His father was a slave, and nevertheless, he reached those heights. The more I hear this story today, I'm thinking to myself, why did do Hollywood back in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s and all the way through now, why have they not made movies of this? You know, liberal Hollywood, you would think they'd make movies. You know, what about our schools? Why are we not hearing about this? You know, why are they not teaching this to students, black students, white students, all students in this country? I mean, this is such an important, you know, discussion. It also, something has been keep coming into the bubbling up in my mind is, it seems that what's been going on in the last 4 years of this administration is we're fighting the Civil War again and creating a lot of animosity between North and South again. What the hell's going on with that?
Well, we won't divert into the current administration. We'll leave that for a wide open Wednesday, and we'll have plenty on it, trust me, including in today's McNugget that you'll hear at 5:30 during Sean Hannity. But you're right. It is a compelling story. Dave, you were doing a little research in the last break, and you did run across somebody looking at producing some television or movie about this.
Yeah, in 2019, Amazon announced that they were going to do a biopic. That was, what, 5 years ago, and it hasn't happened. As for why it hasn't happened, I have a couple of theories. They're just theories. I think there's a fear of underdoing it. This is such an amazing story that how do you do it justice in 90 minutes?
It's a lot. I'm telling you, you're going to have to do one of these series of 10 or 12 episodes that you see on Netflix, Amazon, or wherever. Amazon may be a good place to do it, but it'd be nice to see it get started.
But only if it's historically accurate, because every Civil War buff in the world is going to criticize every element of it, and maybe they just don't want to deal with that.
That's very true. Line two, you're up on Bill Mick Live. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. This is Ed in Melbourne.
Yeah, Ed, what do you think, man?
Great stuff, Dave. Great stuff.
Thanks.
If you ever want to do the history of the space shuttle program, I can help you. 28 plus years.
Well,
very cool, Ed. Ed, that could be something we look forward to doing down the road, although that in Dave's discretion. So drop him an email, dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. That will get it to him and let him see what's going on. Line one, you're next on Bill McLive. Good morning.
Hey guys, it's Steve from Melbourne. I think that the reason the movie's not made is this isn't the liberal left doesn't accept this because you're not supposed to be an independent bloc. And, you know, you have the tax of Republicans or conservatives, but this is the liberal left. They don't want to encourage blacks in this country to become independent thinkers and all this other stuff because they just don't. They're on the plantation of the big city. And that's why.
Steve, did you watch Lance Bass?
No.
Tyler Sheridan did it. I forget if it's on Netflix or Amazon or wherever it is.
I think it's on
Prime.
I've seen it. No, not on Prime. Anyway,
Tyler Sheridan did it, and here is a slave who killed his master, later turned deputy U.S. Marshal. A great story, and it's the counter-narrative to what you were saying here. So I'm thinking there are folks who could do it and do it very well. Line two, tell me your thoughts here.
Hello, Bill. It's Pat from Melbourne.
Yeah, Pat.
Donald Trump is the only man who's exposed the underbelly of the deep state. That's all I got.
How about staying on topic, because we don't do off-topic crap until it's wide open Wednesday, Pat. If you can't learn that lesson, just don't call. I don't know what it is, people. Anyway.
Callers, man, callers.
Yeah, no wonder Dave Bowman hates callers. That would be why.
That,
anyway.
You know, there's something, I realize we're kind of running out of time here, but this is an incredible story. And if you've never heard the story, again, I have not done the story justice. I have scratched the surface, and I'm hoping that you will go out today and say, you know what, I want to know more about that. And even if you just read the Wikipedia article, which is, you know, to me, Wikipedia is a starting point if you have to have
right.
it. But it's an incredible story. Are we not telling the story because we want to keep people on the farm? I don't think so. Yes, he would go on to become a leading Republican during Reconstruction and oppose the end of that. And I think that there's some lessons there. Again, I would say go back to my 1876 series about that time period. But my biggest thought here is that I don't know that you could do this story justice in a film and or even a TV show. You would get picked apart by the historical accuracy. But it is such a great story that it should be told. And maybe, you know, maybe the best people to tell it are the documentary makers who could really make a fantastic one of those live action.
I want to see Tyler Sheridan do it. I really do. Yeah. He did such a great job with Lance Bass. Dave, I got phones blowing up.
All right.
Dare we even try to take another one? Line one, you're on Bill McLive. Good morning.
Is that me?
It would be you. Who are you?
I'm Jim McClellan, or Jim in West Melbourne.
Yeah, Jim.
I've got a little history book, a high school history book called the African American Odyssey. There are 7 mentions of Robert Small in that book, including a picture of him. So he's in the book.
That's good to know, Jim. What's the name of the book again?
It's called the African American Odyssey, and it's a high school history book.
Very good. Thanks for the information. Line three, you're on Bill McLive. Good morning.
William Melbourne.
Yeah, William.
The reason they haven't made a movie is because he's a Republican.
That could be it. You never know. Line four, give me your thoughts here.
Hey, I'm Patty from West Melbourne.
Make it quick, Patty. About out of time here.
I'm hearing from my people that the black people are going to Trump. Reason being?
We're not talking Trump today, Patty. We're not talking the election. We're talking history. We're 0-2 on this off-topic nonsense. Line one, you're the last call of the day. We're about out of time. Good morning.
Good morning. It's James from Melbourne. How are y'all doing?
Very good. What do you think here?
So we moved here from Beaufort, South Carolina, And when I lived there, there was a great book that I picked up there called Be Free or Die. The amazing story of Robert Smalls. And you're right. It is an incredible story. And there's monuments and they teach the history there. They even have tours of where he used to live, where he grew up, and it's just such an interesting story. I'm really surprised that we haven't seen any TV shows.
Yeah, we're hoping to see him. James, thank you. It's good to have you along. Welcome to the community. I don't know how long you've been here. Good to have you along. Dave, we're at about 15 seconds. What a great Dave Does History today. Thank you, my friend.
Good. Look it up, folks. Learn more.